Okay, hi, and hello everybody. This is going to be a shorter program. I'm going to simply do a half hour. It's rule 9 and it's 9.2, and we're beginning on page 260. Sometimes you just have to grab the moments when you can, and it looks like I have a half hour here and not the usual hour and what follows that. All right, so let's see where we are. I want to charge you all, the charge, you know, at the end of various rituals and various organizations, the charge comes to charge up and animate and inspire the newly initiated candidate. I want to charge you all to realize this and to work to substantiate this group integrity, and to develop the power to recognize all such workers everywhere, under any name or organization, and to cooperate with them when so recognized. Okay, and you know, we may remember in our work with the Arcane School, a lot of us have worked there, that at the end of the meditation reports, we were asked to try to identify members of the new group of world servers where we might find them. Okay, so increasingly it's not just the lonely isolated workers or the tiny detached groups. All of this has changed, and probably around the year 1925, probably a decision made at the great conclave of that year to bring the ashrams and their outer representatives into closer rapport with each other. And the result, I think, here was the new group of world servers. It's actually quite a distinguished group, you know. Really, to really belong to it fully, I suppose you have to be initiate of the second degree, and there are higher echelons in that group of the third and fourth degree. But sometimes he speaks as if, you know, simply the average man or woman of goodwill can belong to the new group of world servers. All right, so let's look on and see what else there is here. So we have to recognize them wherever they are found by their love of their fellow human beings and their selflessness and their lack of egocentricity and their recognition of some aspect of the divine plan which they are carrying through in a selfless manner. You know, nobody is perfectly selfless. And even if we were, you know, well, it's a philosophical question. It goes on. The Buddhists say there is no self. The Vedantists say there is. Maybe they're both saying the same thing, but using the word in a different way. So anyway, this is no easy thing to do, to recognize and cooperate. And it presupposes the following. So do we have these things? You know, let's just say, do we have the following. Are they part of our approach? An inner sensitiveness to the plan. Well, if we know more or less what every ashram is trying to do and what every ray can contribute to the welfare of the planet and to the kingdoms and to humanity, then maybe we have, and a sense of timing, sense of where we are as a human race, then maybe we will have some kind of sensitiveness to the plan. Number two, an ability to recognize principles governing conduct and administration. This is let's just call it a first ray factor. And always, well, obviously, principles come first. And everything else in terms of our realizations and our methods and so forth follow on the realization of principles. First things first, really. And he said, if only people would put first things first, if only they would put first things first, then we'd be in a much better position. Right. Every once in a while, I get interrupted to have to do something on the plane of densest illusions. It's a good thing for a person like me that's got mostly air science. Anyway, it's not easy, he tells us, to recognize, to be part of this group integrity, to identify the workers wherever they may be found. Sensitivity to the plan. Principles come first, and then here's a big one, and not easily relinquished, or at least not easily fulfilled. A capacity to overlook the non-essentials and to emphasize the essentials. And DK is always saying, you know, put first things first and emphasize essentials. Well, how do you discriminate? Well, perhaps only we will know when we get so far into details that we lose our way. We lose our way and are not able to really get the job done because we are delayed by our fascination with details. Maybe it's a problem a lot for the fifth ray, to a degree, and the second ray. The second ray is sometimes called the ray of detailed unity, but DK says, please emphasize the unity part and not only the detail. Otherwise, one can get quite pedantic about it. Here's another thing we have to do, a submergence of personal ambition and interest in the furthering of the group ideals and even interest. I mean, you say, you know, we could bypass personal ambition because we begin to identify as something that is not just the personality, but interest coming right from within the causal body. So this can be a significant sacrifice. I remember long ago when I was reading these books, and basically it was saying that those who give their attention to the cultivation of their soul qualities cannot be used in the plan-oriented task of preparing for the reappearance of the Christ. I thought it was a little bit harsh, you know, at the time, but I do begin to see it, you know, the sacrifice of time and of interest. It is required. And I'm sure that all of the masters have certain things they might rather be doing than, as they might say, taking care of you, meaning us, of course. And then a steady preservation of the inner contact through meditation and the overlooking and non-emphasis of personality reactions. In a way, you know, through spiritual discernment, we look right through the lesser things, the personal things, to the essence of the individual, namely the soul, or even more, the spirit. So this is how we can be members of these groups that are emerging, and how we can help the groups emerge. Sensitivity to the plan, recognizing principles, overlooking non-essentials, emphasizing essentials, submerging personal ambition and interest, and keep that contact steady through meditation and the overlooking of personality reactions. I mean, everywhere we go, we're going to have personality reactions within ourselves, within others, and they are secondary matters if we could but see the larger picture. These are the basic prerequisites and should receive the attention of workers and students in all groups. They seem to be, you know, to me somehow so important that I want to, what do I want to do? I want to put another color on them, you know. And I want to ponder them in my own case, and I think we all ought to do that, and see, you know, how we measure up to the requirements. we don't necessarily always need someone to tell us how we're measuring up. We have to arrive at that conclusion inwardly. And the master at some point, you know, might tell us as our affiliation with him grows and as our membership in groups affiliated with him grows, whoever that master may be. In this case, it's Master DK, taking a number of different ray types into his ashram for some preliminary training. These are the basic prerequisites and should receive the attention of workers and students in all groups. Hopefully we're both workers and students. You know, one does not want to be one without the other. Hopefully we are both workers and students. It would be of value if each student would link up every day at 5 o'clock. Now, you know, here's something we've been doing a long time, right? And this is probably given 80 years ago, or roughly 80 years ago, 70-something. It would be of value if each student would link up every day at 5 o'clock by an act of the will with this rapidly integrating group of servers, mystics, and brothers. Notice how he includes all those terms, and that's how we're supposed to think of our fellow members. We think in this way of our fellow members of the new group of world servers, as if they are servers, mystics, and brothers. And to this end, it might be wise to commit to memory the following brief dedication to be said silently at that hour with the attention focused in the head. And yes, silently, depending on where we are, or, you know, perhaps in group form, it can be said together. May the power of the one life pour through the group of all true servers. That's the first ray aspect of it. May the love of the one soul characterize the lives of all who seek to aid the great ones. The love and consciousness of the one soul. And, well, the one soul of what? You know, at least it begins to be planetary in its scope. And later it expands to become universal. And may I or we fulfill my part, fulfill our part in the one work through, and here is the requirement, self-forgetfulness, harmlessness, and right speech. And you see the 1, 2, 3 of it here? See the 1, 2, 3 of this sequence. The self is related to the first aspect, and harmlessness to the second, and right speech, the third, and the appropriate center. Self-forgetfulness, I suppose, is going to occur within the head particularly, a harmlessness within the heart, and right speech at the throat center, albeit not exclusively, because it's important to have links in the triangle, even though one part of it might be emphasized over another part. We, you know, we use this all the time, so do you, 5 o'clock mantra, and we use it often at the end of our webinars and board meetings and all kinds of things, but the power of the one life. We really need to be empowered at this time because so much has to be done, and it's easy to lose power in the attempted doing because our technique is not yet perfect. Maybe if our technique was better, we would not lose power. I have also noticed that when one is serving, one gains power. But one has to serve in the right way. And the love of the one soul, well, heart and the head, characterize the lives of all who seek to aid the great ones. And all these other people, or apparently distinct souls, who are seeking to serve our one great soul. So, naught is but me. And may I fulfill my part in the one work by forgetting the little ego, by really knowing what will help advance my brother, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. You know, you can be super sweet about things and still be harmful. I recall the Dalai Lama saying that when he met Mao Zedong, first time, how incredibly nice Mao was to him. And of course, that was calculated pretty obviously, because later, war broke out and China invaded Tibet. And right speech, occult silence, reading about that, particularly in the beginning of Rule 11 of Rays and the Initiation. So let's memorize this if you haven't done that already, because somehow it declares what we have to be in order to be members of this group and to promote the membership within this great subjective group, which has now been around for almost 100 years. Then carried the thought forward from the rapidly forming group of world servers to the great ones who stand back of world evolution. We always want to be linking up with the masters of the wisdom in the right way, not, requesting something from them, although the Christ did say that whatever shall be asked in his name and with faith in the response shall see it accomplished. But of course, we're not asking for the little personal self off of which, from which we've taken our eyes. We're asking for the welfare of the world and the elevation of humanity and the right elevation of the various kingdoms of nature. And those are the kinds of things that when we ask with faith in the response of the Christ, it will happen. I think I told you this story. Now, this is, of course, maybe a little bit of a personal thing, but we lost a much-loved cat here, and and the cat still hasn't come back, but we were distressed that we had done wrong and that the cat was in danger and probably really was. And I just said, well, okay, I asked to know something about the fate of this cat. I did that before I went to sleep, and this dream came, the cat jumped into my arms, and it was almost like a direct response. Now, that's not the kind of thing that I usually ask for, but it showed that even here, I had in mind the welfare of this beloved animal, and oh, by the way, the name was Shiva. First ray, well, I hope he was able to fend for himself out there. And I was given an answer about his fate. Anyway, this can be done in a few seconds of time, wherever one may be and in whatever company, because, we do it silently. We do it silently, okay, now what's happening here? Something is happening. All right, so I'm going to go backwards. Yeah, and backwards. Right. Okay. And will not only aid in the magical work of the forces of light, in many little subtle ways we can be helping, we must never doubt the power of occultism and the power of the esoteric approach, even though very subtle and not likely to come crashing and banging onto the physical plane with the words, notice me, and will not only aid in the magical work of the forces of light, which can be very high, these forces, but will serve to stabilize the individual. To, if we really knew what we were, we would be stabilized. So, knowing what the self is and what it isn't is stabilizing, to increase his group consciousness in the one soul and to teach him the power of carrying forward interior subjective activities in the face of and in spite of outer esoteric functioning. So it's, we are doing more concerning the dual life. I'm not doing well here, am I? We do live a dual life in the world, but yet not of it. And we have to have this, we must sustain this dual consciousness. And the masters certainly have it, and we have to learn multi-layered meditation and multitasking and multi-layered functioning. He tells us in meditation how many things we may have to keep in our mind simultaneously. All right, well, there's a little bit of work on, what is it called? What is it called? Coming here. The necessity for purity, looks like. And then fundamental forms. Fundamental forms comes next, and at least we can start it, even though I have the intention and must hold to that intention to simply work a few more minutes and produce a half-hour program, schedules being what they are here. The simplicity of this Rule 9, so let's repeat it, huh? Treatise on White Magic and Rule 9, let's repeat it. Condensation next ensues, the fire and waters meet, the form swells and grows, let the magician set his form upon the proper path. Let the magician set his form upon the proper path, which will be a path which serves the divine plan, of course, and not any selfish path. The simplicity of this Rule 9 is such that, in a few words, the entire process of creative evolution is summarized. Again. Condensation next ensues. The fire and waters meet. The form swells and grows. Let the magician set his form upon the proper path. Well, we're going to have mind and emotion meeting, the mental body and the physical, mental body and the astral body. Oftentimes the result of this is what we call steam, right? A glamour-inducing condition. But we can work our way through that. On the mental plane, an idea takes form. Okay, hopefully fed by the soul, right? Hopefully. Well, that's not going to do it. Okay. Hopefully fed by the soul and the mind being in the light of that soul. On the desire plane, sentient energy, attracting, repelling, desiring, and rejecting, you know. On the desire plane, sentient energy pervades that form. There is the desire to see that form emerge. Under the evolutionary process, the form swells and grows and becomes significant, powerful, not negligible, something that can make an impact. Through the right direction of the form and its orientation in the needed direction, the purpose of the thinker, the soul, combined with the thinking man, is fulfilled. Okay, so here we have given the method of creation. Okay, we meditate, we contact the soul, a form is sensed, that form is cultivated within the mind, and then it descends to the astral plane, and desire for the creation of that form, its manifestation, pervades the form which has descended to the astral plane. It's getting more powerful all the time, fed by mind and desire. If we simply leave it on the plane of mind, we may not have the desirous intensity or impulse to see it through into manifestation. And then we are aware that there are two paths, and we set the form upon the proper path and not any negative path which is out of alignment with the divine plan. All life is vibration. That is, once we have some division, you know, you can't have a homogeneous something vibrating because it requires movement, and movement requires division. So all life is vibration, and the result of vibration is form, dense or subtle, and ever subtler as ascension takes place. In other words, on the cosmic physical plane, we have what are called relatively the formless realms, but they are not really formless in the cosmic sense. They are formal, and there is a vibratory frequency characteristic of each of the subplanes on the cosmic physical plane. We don't know about the cosmic astral and so forth. That is a question. So dense or subtle and ever subtler as ascension takes place, as the pulsating life progresses, its rate of vibration changes, and in this changing of vibration lies the secret of form shattering and form building. Okay, a hint, big hint. Because we can apply changes of vibration to a form that is existing in such a way that it increases in its integrity and power in such a way that it disintegrates. Interesting, the law of disintegration, third law, throat center, vibration, and the use of constructive and destructive mantras. Forms are of four kinds in this era of the fourth round. Now, we're not really going to have much time here because, as I say, I do have to stick to this half hour, unfortunately, but it's just the way things are when you have to look towards the physical plane for manifestation. So, forms are, and notice, you know, there are four kinds of forms in the kingdoms, and in the fourth kingdom of nature, because it is the fourth, one can enter the fifth kingdom, or the sixth, or the seventh, and still preserve the fourth type of form, that of the human form as it now is, because the entry into those kingdoms is a subtle matter, and the form as provided by the number four and for the fourth kingdom remains as it is. We're not yet in the fifth round, or we're not yet dealing with the fifth chain. The numbers will change accordingly. Anyway, we have here something called, and I don't have much time left, the form of the personality. Oh, it's a fairly long thing. That vehicle of physical, astral, and mental matter that provides the means of contact in the three worlds, it is built in each life, the key of the vibration being set up in the life preceding the present. So we come in vibratorily with what we left upon outgoing in the last incarnation. That form provides proves adequate for the man and serves him till death. The man who is entering on the occult path starts with the vehicle provided, and during incarnation builds for himself ever a newer and better vehicle, perhaps through the image of the ideal man in the heart, a version of the master in the heart. And the more progressed he is, the more consciously he works, realizing the necessity, the importance of doing so, instead of just kind of blundering on through, you know. He eventuates that constant turmoil and frequent ill health of the beginner in the occult life. He senses the law. He realizes the need of raising his keynote, you know, frequency. And frequently he begins with mistakes. He starts to build anew his physical body by diet and discipline instead of working from the inner outward. So occultly, work from within. Occultly. Okay. In the careful discipline of the mind and the manipulation of thought matter, and in transmutation of emotion comes the working out onto the physical plane. So, obviously, you know, if we could only fathom it, work from above to below. Add to the two above physical plane purity, as to food and manner of life, and in 7 years' time, the man has built for himself 3 new bodies around permanent atoms, and they will be much more successful in holding the vibration of the soul and expressing it. Well, we may review this next time. So this is now the end. Whoa. All right. So end. No, why is that happening? Body around. Maybe I'll just have to make this a little bigger. End. Okay. End of A Treatise on White Magic Video Commentary Program. Why am I having this problem today? Program number 14. Number 14. 1/2 hour approximately. And the rules for magic on the astral plane. And this is rule 9, and it's 9.2. Okay. So now we will begin here. And what page are we on? Page 262. Page 262. And now here is the beginning of A Treatise on White Magic Video Commentary, program number 15. We don't know how long. Rules for magic on the astral plane, rule 9. And I see here, I must like that rule 11 a lot because I managed to do that. Rule 9, and it's going to be 9.3. We'll see whether it's a half hour or more. Okay, so the very first form that we dealt with is the personality form. Now remember that form building, interestingly, comes under the second ray. The matter out of which that form is built comes from the third ray. It's the third ray factor, but the form itself, that magnetic aggregation of related energies and lesser forms relates to the second ray. Okay, that'll be it, and we'll be seeing you soon. This form of the personality. I think we'll be quite interested in the different kinds of forms that show up. The form of the environment, the form of the devotee, that's interesting, no? And the form of the causal body. Why these particular forms? All right, let's try to figure that out. Thank you, and we'll be working ahead in this book. I suspect another 100 programs will be coming out of it because it's a long book, and it goes into great detail about the process of magical creation and the recreation of ourselves. See you then. Many blessings. Lots of love. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.